You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Thank you for pressing play. You have reached the one and only IT in the D Show. We are at episode 215. Guest today, Jenkins Eboware. He is the founder of Samex. He's changing the way the medical profession deals with customers. Kind of a cool story, all software-based. Very interesting conversation. Also, we got Will Anderson in here from CoreTech. He's a Microsoft MVP evangelist. He's big into
He's cloud, got the job
DevOps.
That we want.
He does.
What do you do? I travel to conferences and I talk to people about stuff.
How great Microsoft is. Right.
I do PowerPoint slides, lots of
them. Hey, before we get rolling, are you in the dark ages when it comes to your digital workspace environment? Connected Workspace by Accelera Solutions provides you the ability to stay connected and secured when using your own laptop, tablet, or mobile device. 69%, and I still say that is a made-up number just to get a giggle out of us while we're doing this read. 69% of employees are more productive in this type of work environment. Contact Accelera Solutions to discuss how to modernize your digital workspace. Go to www.accelera. That's ACCELERA solutions.com/WS1. That's William Sammy One.
The number one.
The number one.
And Nuri, just so you know, now you may kneel for the intro.
Not yet, because that's www.accelerasolutions.com/WS1. Now you can take a knee.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
The following program is intended for mature audiences.
I'm Wyatt, that's Gary, you're Bob, and you're Dave. This is the IT and the D Show.
This is Max Headroom. And what you're about to witness is one of the most sinister-sounding intros to a trailer to one of the greatest epics ever.
This is Billy D. Williams. Bob and Dave and I are enjoying a Colt 45 right now. And remember, IT in the D, it works every time.
Where do you guys think you are?
The Library of Congress?
Detroit?
Beyond the Sun?
Any of those, right?
Take him to Detroit.
No! No, not Detroit! No! No, please! Anything with that! No!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
They don't come! Shut up!
Hi, this is Christy Swanson, and you're listening to the IT in the D Show. And Bob and Dave touch my hoo-hoos.
What happens when you tap the angry beaver in the bunghole?
Exactly.
Come on.
What size?
Get the hell with this. I'm calling a break. We'll come back to this.
This is Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley, and the only two guys I hate more than Dinesh are Bob and Dave. Suck it, guys.
What's up, everybody? This is Billy Zabka. Sweep the leg. Listening to IT and the D Show. No mercy.
I may have to wipe the beak off.
Hi, this is Kelly LeBrock from Weird Science. So, Bob and Dave, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
I know.
Are we at a break yet?
Hey, this is Zach McGowan from Planet Earth. You're listening to IT and the D Show.
Hi, I'm Ernie Hudson, and you're listening to IT and the D. All you nerds out there.
Nerds.
What is a nerd?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Hey, Detroit, this is Anthony Michael Hall. You're listening to my buddies Bob and Dave on IT in the D.
This is Scott Steiner, Big Papa Pump. The IT in the D Show is your hookup. Holler if you hear me.
You're in your underwear, I'm in my underwear. Here, let's hang out.
No, I'm sorry, honey, I have a headache.
I definitely want to see Bob in his underwear, that's a fact.
Hey, everybody, this is Tony Todd. What's happening? You may know me from Candyman, The Rock, Sushi Girls, Zoom, Night of Living Dead, a lot of pop culture media madness. Anyway, you're listening to IT in the D Show. Business.
I'm totally into Dave, but not right. So much Bob.
This is Robert Hayes, the Jet Striker, to my mother. When I'm not hanging out at the McGumbo Bar, I'm listening to the IT and the D Show. It's worse than Detroit.
Is there such thing as a meat hangover?
I love my Monday meat steak.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and you're listening to the IT and the D Show. Tough guys. Oh!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
The question isn't what are we going to do, the question is what aren't we going to do?
Ludicrous speed! Sir, had you better buckle up? Now buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!
Welcome back. Thank you for listening. This is the one and only IT in the D Show, broadcasting live here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Spot the sales guy hanging out with Dave the Geek. Nuri, you may rise now. Nuri the FNG is getting into a seat. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker, is in studio. Find us online, itinthed.com. Give us a like on the social and follow us everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold. Hey, this I'd unlocked my phone, so I was pausing there to pull up the read. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Bluehost. They are a top-rated website provider that powers over 2 million websites. They have everything you need to build a website you've always wanted and gives you the freedom and design your website your way without being limited by templates. It's simple enough for beginners like me and powerful enough for the most advanced users like Dave and Nuri. And with fully customizable templates, third-party app support, you get complete flexibility and control. Not only that, you're getting 99.9% uptime, automatic updates, maximum security, including malware monitoring, 24/7 tech support, online resources. No wonder they have the top recommended WordPress host on WordPress.org since 2005. I didn't even know WordPress went back that far.
Oh, yeah.
But do us a favor. Act now. You get 50% off if you sign up at Bluehost.com/IT. That's Bluehost.com/IT. It's so easy to use. Even a Bob can do it.
Will you stop talking about it after you're done using it? Jeez, Bob.
Come on.
And you didn't even have a margarita pre-show.
I did.
Those margaritas are killer tonight. Jeez.
Oof. Well, yeah, they're bringing them to us in mugs now. They've given up on the margarita glasses. They've learned their target demographic.
So Equifax is like a bad case of crabs. It just won't.
Dude, our stories are just full of the poop and other bodily excrement stuff. It's just bad.
And where does Equifax fall into that? Is that part of
that's
the poop?
Poop. Yeah. Definitely poop. It's all the poop, yeah.
But like, here's what's going on now. I don't know who's worse at this, LifeLock or Equifax. LifeLock's like, we'll save you, Equifax users. Just buy this buy this identity software from us. That's a service that's provided by Equifax.
Want.
So like they're OEMing Equifax, and they decided to be the saviors, and they didn't think anyone would pull back the covers and realize they're selling them like, we're just going to repackage our poop and sell you poop with a fancy bag on it.
It's like that website. It's like, you know, go to the website, find out if you've been breached, but then you're giving Equifax your information again to see if you've been breached. It just
it's like that phone call you get. No, just give us your social security number to make sure everything's okay. Okay.
Well,
that'd be wonderful.
Jumping down, I know this came out late, but one of the things that happened was that this is the thing that creeps me out, and we'll rant about this in a minute, but Equifax acquired an identity protection company before making the hack public. So after they knew the breach happened, and then before, they went out and acquired an identity
I wonder if the same executives that sold all their stock but
then
allegedly weren't made aware of the breach are the same ones that approved the purchase of the company that everyone's going to use.
As they're selling their stock, hey, I've got a really good idea.
You know, I think acquisitions take a long time though, right? But like, how long? This isn't Equifax's first breach. It didn't just happen in May. Previously, right? So maybe, I don't know. It's kind of like saying, hey, I'm a glass manufacturer and I will break all your windows unless you give me more money. It's I don't know. I'm just going to leave that out there.
No, we've been talking about this every week too. It's what are you going to do? We got no recourse.
Profit and chaos is what they're doing.
Right.
It's totally. And then the thing that got me was that they tweeted out a site that was not actually their site. So Equifax themselves basically tweeted – I mean, the whole thing to check whether or not you've been breached was a very suspicious-looking site. It wasn't like Equifax.com/am I breached. It's like Equifax Security 2017.
Right.
Some smart person went and registered Security Equifax 2017.
And started tweeting it
at them. And then they retweeted it.
You have to wonder, too, because they own the Equifax domain. Why not create a subdomain around that, direct them to that, because then you know it's going to be legit. Instead, they're creating the second domain altogether for their legit site. you know, it's prime for phishing.
Well, good thing,
because at that point they're only thinking about the SEO and, you know, how can we get more people to use our service, Equifax, even after this breach.
Yeah.
The thing was, at least the guy that made that phishing site was doing it to scream at Equifax to get your security together. He was quoted saying it's in everybody's interest to get Equifax to change the site to a reputable domain, because I can guarantee they're real malicious. Phishing versions out there. Mine's not one of them. This was a wake up call for them, or trying to be.
But come on, is Equifax.com even a legitimate, reputable domain anymore?
No.
It's a lot more reputable than 2017 EquifaxSecurity.com.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I guess the guy created this site within hours. It was up with, like, literally within hours, just to, like.
And it looked a lot like the site
totally.
That they had up and running. And to your point, yeah, you're right. They are worried about SEO. But the fact of the matter is that at this point, I would be worried about the 150 million people that are about to, you know, fire up a class action lawsuit.
So, Bob, you fly a lot.
Yeah.
Ever you've flown out of Detroit Metro?
Yeah.
I would assume, yeah.
I was just there on Thursday, in fact.
Did you hit the bathroom while you were there?
I did. I washed my hands several times.
Did you notice anything funny?
I don't think so. Why?
So I love all the tap dancing that's going around this story where and I want to know how it happened. But they said
no, I got a better question. Go ahead.
They're pulling out all of the soap dispensers in all the bathrooms.
In the North Terminal, right?
They're just saying Detroit Metro Airport.
It was the North Terminal. Yeah.
After what they call a quote-unquote unusual substance was found in the soap at several locations.
Like dye or hair?
Well,
or?
So what they're saying is that the exact substance is not being identified, but they said it's likely a bodily fluid.
Ooh.
It's not spit, and it probably comes from a male.
Can I say jizz on this show?
Yeah, they totally can. Yeah.
Can I say spunk on this show?
Yeah. So it's jizz hands.
Well, actually, since this is an airline and the terminal is served by everyone at Detroit that's not Delta, right? So it's
right.
All the other airlines. So I've come up with a few kind of taglines for the North Terminal, right?
Okay.
So I'm thinking maybe the JetBlue Jizzer.
Nice.
Or the Spirit Spunker. maybe.
Jesus, Chris. So, like, here's what I don't get. Like, the guy in me says, all right, we all seen soap. Soap is usually a pearly color, which resembles said product that you just named.
Kind of viscous.
Right. So when does we put soap in your hand and go, goo? Like, how do you discover it?
How
do you know which one's soap, which one isn't? Dude, like,
I'm pretty sure that's why they're taking them all out.
Maybe it mixed with the soap or completely replacing the soap?
I'm hoping
it was replaced. I was
maybe
your attitude.
For a while.
I hate my job.
How did it get in there?
A horse was seen leaving one of the bathrooms.
Rub one out.
I'm thinking it's probably a guy who works in the maintenance and he's super pissed off at his job and hates it. And I don't know.
And he told somebody time. Thinking it was funny.
We'll call him the North Terminal Nutter.
There you go.
See, it's a prank call. Some guy just said, I want to be on the news. And he said that he did it. And then it called security, and then now he's on the news, and he looks at it and goes, "Ee, that's all this is. It's trolling the paper. It's so easy to do these days."
But it's a thing. But speaking of bodily fluids, like if you weren't dealing with enough after all the hurricanes blew through, and basically just drenched and destroyed large swaths of southeast U.S. So FEMA. Went ahead and tweeted out a number for people that had been affected by Hurricane Irma to, help get FEMA assistance and get relief. The problem is that they were supposed to be sending out an 888 number, and they sent out an 800 number. And so people that were calling this number were greeted with, welcome to America's hottest talk line. Guys, hot ladies are waiting to talk to you. Press 1 to connect for free now.
Are they talking about my roof that's flown off or the fact that I'm still without power? No?
It's HR and FEMA going, hey, we're going to make hurricane relief a little bit more fun, right? No, it's not what happened. But here's the thing. Okay, now here's the worst part. Did you see what the number is?
Roof blue.
Roof 1-800 roof blue BLU. Like, come on, man. FEMA, like, again, people are dealing with enough crap. And, like, Yeah, but your roof blue? Yeah, call his number.
My roof blue.
Right.
Your roof blue.
There might
yeah.
be some like fake guy pretending to be a girl that's got his you know what in his hand right now.
Whoever set up the port number though had some amazing foresight.
Dude, this is the thing. This is the thing that happens. I'm in the call center business and I've been for like 15 years, and every once in a while I get a ticket saying, "Hey, Nuri, I called or having complaints from customers that call our number that hear porn." And I'm like, some smart person out there registers like 1-800-VERIZON and 1-888-VERIZON goes to porn, right?
Right, so it's
like,
right.
This is a thing to catch accidental dials. It's big business.
Come on, FEMA Roof Blue. You guys are clowns.
Bob, Walmart is trying to get you one step closer to your dream.
Oh, no. This is where I draw the line. I have a line. You might not think I have a line. Like, I have a line.
I've never encountered the
wait,
line.
Wait, so getting nachos and drinks delivered to you by a drone is not your line?
No.
No, no, no.
But someone walking into your house is your line?
That's no, right. Walmart, go on, go on.
Walmart wants to – because they want to – you know, Amazon is doing their one-hour delivery.
Which is great. They'll deliver booze in Seattle.
You got shipped. And they do booze in New York and D.C. too.
And I'm a regular once-a-week shipped
You
user.
Got shipped. Bring the groceries to your house. Walmart – wants to bring the groceries to your house and put them away for
no.
you.
Whoa.
No, no. No, no, no.
My fridge is an effing mess. I don't know. They're getting nothing in it.
And even better, Walmart is testing a service that delivers groceries straight to your home into your fridge when you're not home.
No, see, here's the thing. You put away stuff in what? Like, there's probably like five different places you put away stuff.
Right.
You have a pantry if you have a pantry. Like, usually cereal goes like somewhere. Your coffee stuff and like your granola bars go somewhere. Your snacks go like in a bottom drawer, and like you want your deli meat in the tray and their veggies in that tray, and like
and the Pop Tarts got to go on the fourth shelf, not the third shelf, so I know where the hell they are.
Yeah. Is next to. Right.
So now I'm gonna get a Walmart employee coming into my house when I'm not home.
Well, but you got to and you got to put a new lock on your door because it's a smart lock that goes on your door that they give the drivers a one time passcode too.
Get out of here.
And so they wait. They see if you answer the door. Like they ring the doorbell. But if you don't answer the door, then they use this one-time passcode to get into your house.
Hang on, as a self-proclaimed one of the laziest people you'll ever meet, there's no way that it's not that difficult for me to get off my couch and to take the six bags from the grocery and walk into my kitchen.
But, you know, I see like if you work and your wife works and no one's home.
No.
Silicon Valley jobs, they're pioneering this in Silicon Valley right now. You guys are working long hours, 12-hour days. Like I would kind of love to come home to
Do you know when I have the groceries delivered? On Saturday or Sunday when
Working on those days too. I'm in Silicon Valley. I mean, come on.
When we're making coffee, we'll be in the pantry and our head in the fridge and we'll order stuff and they'll usually deliver like at 1 or 2 o'clock. So it's like it's usually like an hour away.
It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome. And like they come to the front door and we're just finishing up breakfast and kind of chilling morning, you know, weekend morning, and we grab our stuff and we go on with our day. Like I don't want anyone coming into my house. Like again, get takeout if you need groceries that bad during the week. Like, go get a hot and ready for crying out loud.
Hey, duh, we did forget to mention we were down in Ohio this weekend. We went from guest speakers to featured guest speakers to right as we were getting announced to head up, we were the keynote speakers.
But then online, we weren't the keynote speakers.
But then online, yeah.
But we were.
But I have a screenshot from their Facebook post that says we were the keynote speakers. So we were down at the National Podcast Power Conference. We were down in beautiful Perrysburg, Ohio.
Which is like the fancy part of Toledo, which I didn't even know existed, which is kind of an awesome, cool little town.
It was really great. We've, of course, being us, shout out to the wonderful staff at Buster Brown's, the beautiful little dive bar that we found and took over, where we had all the drinks.
Every wedding in Perrysburg showed up there.
Dude, that was amazing. Because I'm sorry, and I know people, because we did talk to a lot of people about this stuff, and if any of you are listening, whatever. The best part of the night was when the wedding party showed up, and as they were walking in, I was on the back porch smoking a cigarette, and it just so happened that the bride, in full bridal, she was like wearing her bride's dress. As she was walking there, her ex-boyfriend just happened to be on the back porch smoking a cigarette and started talking mad smack and showing all of the saved photos of her on the back porch.
Yeah, boy.
That was pretty amazing. Yeah, boy. So, yeah.
Stay classy.
But no, so I mean the podcast conference was cool. It was fun.
Shout out
had
to
a
Daryl.
Great time.
Put in
Daryl,
a ton of work.
Well done.
Yep.
So carrying on. And here's your segue. We took an Uber everywhere we went. because we were hammered, and we could not do that in London right now.
London told Uber, you go bye-bye.
Yeah. London is all done with Uber. And
now, hold on a minute. You guys are the techies. Explain to me how you can take away the Uber. Because that's
geofencing, right? Basically, like if you call a request, you're calling for a city. And basically, if you shut off every Uber account in, or the driver account, you basically stop it, right? Or you basically say,
do they have to slap an injunction on Uber to stop it? Is that what it was?
I think it has to do with a license. Like they have to, a lot of cities like New York have medallion licenses where you have to be, you know, certain requirements with the city and you pay a certain amount of money to get it. And I think they basically just revoked their license. I think they have until September 30th, so 5 more days to use Uber in London before it goes away. And I know Uber's appealing. There was a big letter today that the new CEO, Dara, wrote basically apologizing, said they hadn't handled things well, and they're basically trying to come up with something to keep operating. But that's 40,000 drivers in London and 3.5 million customers. That's a huge market for Uber.
Oh, absolutely.
Like New York. Sorry, no more Uber, right? That's massive.
40,000?
40,000.
Well, and apparently the crux of the entire issue, and or at least, you know, what they're coming down on them for, is that they're not being upfront about disclosing what the background checks come up with about their drivers. You know, it's like 100, I believe it was 160 or 170 something instances where, you know, there were, you know, drivers floating around with sexual assaults, with, you know, assault cases, with all this other stuff. I can't say that I necessarily disagree with the London government on this one.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, that's the old PowerPoint thing saying, you know, in the 70s we told our kids to stay away from strangers, you know, don't talk to strangers and don't get into strangers' cars. Now we're using
– No, I'm literally using my phone to do exactly that to get in their car and not even asking for candy first.
Right. Exactly.
Something else with Uber I got. There's a class action lawsuit going on. Did you get that mail?
Huh.
So if you took an Uber between 2003 and 2016, you were charged a safe rider's fee of $3.
Oh, I did.
Per?
Yes, yes, yes.
And basically now there's a $32.5 million class action lawsuit that's in the pending phase.
Yep. So this is an interesting stat that out of the 154 sexual assault allegations made to the police between February 2015 and February 2016, which the suspect was a taxi driver, 32 of them were concerned Uber. So out of 154, 32 of them. So, I mean, again, you're you know, that to me, that not the biggest problem that London has is Uber.
Well, it kind of sounds like they have the bigger problem with the cabs.
And I'm sure, I mean, in every city, the Taxi and Limo Commission is like a huge lobby and it represents a ton of money. So I'm sure they're behind it too. They've had websites over the years basically saying, you know, dig into Uber because we're not the problem. But when really...
Oh, and the taxi unions are so
vicious.
I lived in Toronto a couple of years back and Uber moved into that town and the taxis... I mean, have you guys ever driven around in Toronto? And it's basically you can be out at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday and find a traffic jam. That's how bad the traffic is out there. And so thank you. So you know the taxi cabs out there, the unions that were running it were actually doing things like they would park their taxis out on these main city streets in downtown Toronto to completely just cause massive amount of gridlock in protest to what Uber.
That's what they were doing. That's what they were doing in London not too long ago. Yeah,
Italy or France, that they threw rocks at the Uber drivers, the taxi drivers.
France, yeah.
Oh my god,
yeah, that's a thing.
They got pretty nasty about it.
Oh yeah, super nasty.
But on the other side of it too is, you know, I kind of get the whole, you know, Uber's promising background checks and stuff, and if they're not, I can understand Uber not wanting to say, well, you know, XYZ driver has blah, blah, blah offenses, but at least some type of documentation that they can present saying, yes, these are the background checks that we're doing. These are, you know.
Yep.
So they've got to be able to do something.
So, Dave, I got a question for you.
Shoot.
I've known you for a very, very, very long time.
Far too long.
Married almost.
Yeah, pretty much. And you get mad at people and you hold grudges probably more than anyone I've ever met. You remember everything. I mean, have you ever gotten so mad? Well, I know you don't jog, but have you ever gotten so mad where you're going to go jogging and like poop on their front lawn every day?
No.
Every time you have to go poop.
And I also have not looked up my old bully's mom on dating websites either.
Oh, wait. Let me finish with that one. We'll end with that. Hold on. Let me finish with this one. So Colorado Springs, Colorado, like every day this woman's taking like human – like you know the difference between a dog and human, right? I think you would know.
One has corn in it. One doesn't.
Correct. Because dogs don't eat corn.
I don't remember eating any corn.
They dubbed her the Mad Pooper, apparently. And like, I heard about this. The worst part is like her kids are the first one to saw it. So like, she's been putting signs up like on the jogging path in front of her house going, please don't poop on my lawn. Please, like, it's kind of like the slow children at play. Like, you don't know if it's slow children or go slow because there's children at play.
Right.
This is like, don't poop on my lawn. And like, she doesn't care.
Like, seriously, why do I have to, like, yeah. If I have to have a tag on a hairdryer that says do not use in shower, it's because some moron tried to use it in the shower and sue.
Right. And Lieutenant Black, who's head of the Colorado Springs Police Department, who's prophetic, you know, made the quote of the day saying, this isn't behavior we see on a routine basis.
You don't say.
No shit, Lieutenant. No shit.
There's poop everywhere.
To be completely fair, like when I was marathon training, there is a point like mile 13 or mile 14 that it's pretty intense.
And I've seen racers poop.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Like even like
off the side of the path.
Or even down their leg if they're like competitively running or running for a PR. I ran into a 7-Eleven. I'm like, do you have a bathroom? He's like, no, it's not a public one. I'm like, it's really urgent. And I'm like super sweaty in mile 13. But like every day, this is not some lady who's just like, oh God, this is a thing that I now have to do. There's some kind of personal vendetta here.
But Nuri, you know what that story – you know what your story says to me?
What does it say?
You shouldn't be running that far.
Oh.
There's a simple answer to that problem. Don't hit mile 13.
I run till I shit myself. I have to go.
So the key to this whole thing is she brings her own teepee. Like, she knows. Like, it's not like it's an accident. Like I'm just like, oh, my God, I had like a burrito, breakfast burrito. Now it's hit me. Like, no, like, this is like planned out. Like,
it's not like you driving home from Waffle House?
No, that was an awful drive. Oh, I did not feel good. That was the first time I've had Waffle House since like my 19-year-old spring break in Florida. Oh, it was not a good thing.
And we ate the menu.
So if you're on YouTube right now, the greatest video I've seen probably in the last, what, 3 months? That's how the internet works. You forget about it as soon as you see it. So I'm going to paint the story real quick. This woman calls a radio station and basically said, hey, I'm single.
Well, we've all heard these on. I mean, they're like local radio stations do it. You know, it was the War of the Roses for a while.
Yeah.
Where some idiot.
The one that got away.
Right.
So it's like, I'm dating a boy that's 20 years younger than me. And it was the best guy I've ever had, and I want to find him.
Well, so yeah, so it's the –
He went dark on me.
He ghosted on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's, you know, we went out. We had a great dinner. You know, he was the nicest guy ever. We went back. The sex was fantastic. You know, we did it multiple times that night. Yeah, yeah, I thought for sure this was a thing and so it was going to be great.
So they call the guy. They said, hey, we got so-and-so on the phone. And
well, no, because he's all cautious, which as you should be.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They're like, oh, you know, hey, this is, you know, 96 point whatever. And he was like, yeah. He's like, well, you know, we've got someone who wants to talk to you, you know, said that, you know, you were the best guy ever. And yet he was like, yeah. And he's like, well, and her name is, and he was like, and he'd lost it. I've never heard anybody start laughing that hard that instantly in a long, long time.
So anyway, as the story progresses, he said, oh, I didn't want to date her. This guy that bullied the living hell out of me in high school, this is his mom, and I wanted the ultimate get back, so I waited 20 years so I could finally tell him I banged your mom.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
That's stone cold.
That's amazing. And she's on the line hearing this.
And on top of that, she's like, well, I'm going to press charges. He goes, well, then I'm going to text your son the picture of my in her mouth. And then she was like,
Well, you took pictures of me against my will. Whatever, I didn't, or without my knowledge.
Like,
and he's
I did.
You're looking right at the camera, smiling.
Look it up on YouTube. It is the best 5 minutes you're going to spend.
It's outstanding.
It's the biggest revenge story. That is a 20-year plot line.
And the line is pretty much right down the middle. When I see comments on this story, women are like, that is the worst thing ever. He's a horrible human being, yada, yada, yada. Guys, he's a god.
Because there's that one guy in high school that you would, like, it's like Billy Madison where you put on the, you cross the name off the list that's on your wall. Everyone has that list on the wall.
Uh-huh.
Like those three guys. That, you know.
Well, dude, you remember I came here one night and I was, because I asked you, I'm like, hey, because I'm watching kids at the ice cream parlor, you know, getting my kids ice cream, and I'm listening to them banter back and forth, and I'm like, I'm confused. Is your mom added me on Snapchat, the new I effed your mom.
Oh.
Because like that, like that's what they were. I was like, oh, yeah, your mom added me on Snapchat. Oh, yeah, I added your mom. Your mom added me back, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's yeah, that's been a, yeah, a thing for a while.
So, hey, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with Jenkins Eboware from Samex. This is the IT in the D show.
And we'll be right back.
IT in the D. Read. Meet. Listen. Networking Detroit, one beer at a time.
Hey, this is John Schneider from Nip Tuck Smallville, the haves and the have-nots. Oh, Dr. Quinn, hot in Cleveland. Secret Life of the American Teenager and just about everything you can possibly imagine. And oh, yeah, the Dukes of Hazzard. You're listening to Bob and Dave. It's the IT in the D show.
ITinTheD.com.
Welcome back. Segment two, the IT in the D show, broadcasting live here in Studio One.
Bob.
Podcast. Bob. Detroit. What? We're one away from.
You know what
I
next week is?
Yeah, it's 216.
You know what that is?
200 episodes past when I said we would run out of crap to talk about.
Just want to make sure you know.
Yeah, I know. I know. You remind me. You remind me every 2 weeks. Sitting here in Studio One in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. This is Bob the Sales Guy. That is Dave the Geek. Nuri the FNG is in the house and sitting peacefully. And also Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker, is in studio. Find us online, itinthed.com, because we are IT in the D, and you just
you still aren't, and you're going to be so mad pretty soon.
Love you. Muy,
it's
going to
be amazing.
Muy, muy.
Long time.
Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible has the best audiobook performances, an unmatched selection, and the most exclusive content. I have to think about when I listen to audiobooks, the Harry Potter series. So Jim Dale is my absolute favorite narrator of any type of books. He's got the most incredible voice, and he does like slightly different voices for all the characters. Even though he's just one audiobook narrator, he has a voice for pretty much every character in the Harry Potter series, and it's amazing. It's basically like you were transformed into that Harry Potter world. It's the most crazy immersive experience of audiobook listening, in my opinion. And it's because every Audible sci-fi performance, it's so powerful, it's basically like transporting you to another dimension, even while sitting in traffic or working out. So start a 30-day trial.
For us, it's sitting in traffic.
Right, exactly.
We have voices for radio, that's for sure. So start a 30-day free trial about your audio, or start a 30-day free trial and your first Audible book, it's free. So learn more at audible.com/ITinTheD. Once again, that's audible.com/ITinTheD, all put together.
I still think it's awesome that I bought Jim Gaffigan Dead as Fat. On the Audible book, and Jim Gaffigan read it.
His dad is fat.
Yeah, I know, because yeah, my kids say, "Do you have a fat dad?" But like, I couldn't believe like he actually read the book. I thought it was just going to be some like voiceover,
some random guy. Yeah,
yeah. Like, how cool is that? Anyway, so hey, we have a great guest. He's my former neighbor, known him for years as an IT manager in the healthcare vertical, but he went out and ventured and started his own company. Thought he had a pretty cool story to tell, but we have Jenkins Eboware's in the house. Started a company called Samex. How you doing, sir?
Doing fantastic, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Good. Never been better. Welcome to our little home away from home.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard about ITinTheD for a while. You know, I've listened to you guys, so I'm happy to be here.
So. Good. So you were kind of a jack of all trades as an IT manager, but you more primarily focused on coding. And, you know, you were telling me before the show you kind of found a little, I guess, something that's been lacking kind of in the healthcare business. What are you doing now?
Security.
Right, that
privacy.
Too. That too. Malware, email phishing. No.
I mean, security, that's a whole other beast, so we don't.
Yeah, yeah.
I would let the professionals do that. But what we do is, you know, first of all, we've noticed a shift in IT and healthcare caused by regulations. You know, a few years ago, they had what was called a fee-for-service model, which is you went to the doctor's office and you had to wait with a lobby full of people. You know, and now there's been a shift to a value-based model. So basically, you go in for your checkup, but then you never hear from your doctor. You get emails, you get, you know, you want to use their app. So what this has done for the healthcare industry is created this model where they don't want to see you. You know,
well, and we don't want to see them.
Right. So
that's
we don't.
Mutual, yeah.
Right.
So we just want to know we're not dying next week.
Exactly.
Right.
So they're using technology to take care of you without actually seeing you. So you've seen a surge in the market of the new technologies. You know, you've heard about IoT. Well, there's the health IoT. You know, they're using wearable devices, your Fitbits, your tablet devices. They're putting sensors in homes that can check where you are in each room. I went to the HIMSS conference 2 years ago in Chicago, Illinois, and it's amazing that you can, with a sensor device, they can track that you're sitting in the living room, you're sitting down or laying down. They can track falls. They can track you taking your medication, your body temperature. So what this has done is created this new industry, this health IT industry. So I think I can I've always been interested in healthcare. And IT is just kind of in my blood.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to lie. I thought it was one of the coolest things ever. Like, not too long ago, I woke up just feeling like death, right. And I hadn't been out with Bob the night before. So, you know, I went and checked, and, like, you could do – the entire doctor's appointment was through my phone.
Yep.
Like, little – nice little WebEx, and I mean, it was like they wanted to check and see if I had strep, so I had to get in this awkward position with my phone and a flashlight so they could see the back of my throat. And they, you know, they called in prescriptions right then. And like I didn't have to leave my house. I didn't have to leave my bed. It was amazing.
Yeah, that is telemedicine.
Yeah,
so, yeah, being able to diagnose you and your symptoms.
Yeah,
and so, actually seeing you.
So I mean, the screaming question at me is: so if the doctors don't want to see you anymore, what are the doctors doing? No, I'm being honest. Like, you know, yeah, because
they're practicing medicine.
Well, my wife's perfect. My wife's a PA, and then she's hired so the doctors don't have to see the people that. You know, but it gets really serious and they go to the doctor. But like this, it's like you're eliminating the doctor altogether. Like, what are they doing? Like,
well, you're not completely eliminating them. You know, they do have your annual checkups. But unless you have a chronic condition or an emergency, yeah, they want to take care of you from the comfort of your home.
Sure.
Right. So what they can do is focus on, you know, getting more patients. So that's why I started SAMX, is I saw
focus on getting more patients that they're not going to see.
Well, with private practices, and especially in the post-acute care part of healthcare, which is, you know, after you're diagnosed from the hospital, you know, the model there is let's get as many patients as we can. And I've even seen a shift where they go from calling patients clients, which can be helped because that is their revenue source.
Sure.
But I always feel that you should make the patient care the utmost priority. So
I mean, if I could – honestly, if it was as simple as me walking through a door for 15 minutes getting my BP and my blood work done, I would go to the doctor every 3 months, like just to like make sure my vital – you know, my stuff was good.
Right.
You know, and now it's a process. You got to take a half day off of work.
See, if you didn't have shipped delivering all your food from Meijer, you would know that the pharmacy at Meijer has the little chair you can sit in. That does your blood pressure and weight. All
that's the blood work, though. That's the
blood
need.
Pressure. Just
put it away. Yeah, I can do that at home, idiot.
Yeah. So, I started SAMX because, you know, my career's taken kind of an interesting path. I started out in web design, which is one of the things we do. I started in web design, and I got into healthcare as an analyst, where what I was doing was helping physicians identify gaps in care, places where they missed that. Procedures that need to be performed, where they missed that hospital visit, identifying gaps and helping them, you know, reach out to patients. And now I'm in healthcare IT, which is kind of combining that analytical aspect of making sure we have all our bases covered with our patient care and also the technology. So that shift has affected, you know, the healthcare IT space, but also development too, because you're seeing new development technologies come out as well, things that can help create solutions faster. So you've seen a shift in mobile apps, for instance. You know, whereas before, everyone, you know, the only way to create an app was by either programming with Android or iOS. What you can do now is with technology like HTML5, you can create hybrid apps, which, you know, your site is built with HTML5, JavaScript, any libraries that you prefer. And they can be wrapped in a shell and deployed on a mobile device. So you don't have to go through the long process of creating an app in a native environment using, you know, Objective-C or whatever you want to create your apps with.
I think too, like WebRTC, right? You could basically pipe in a video call to your doctor right from a web page and not have to go through an app.
Yes, exactly. And that makes deploying solutions faster because with a hybrid app, you don't have to worry about updating the architecture using that native language. You just create your updates on the web end, and that pushes directly to the device.
Right.
So, yeah, another, I guess another thing is when you look at how patient care is, it's predominantly old people. Am I wrong? Like, so, you know, you have the young people, which would adopt this very quickly. And I'm talking, you know, sub 45 right. crowd. I mean, they just have to have just the old school doctor office stuff for the older crowd, or are they trying to enable them in some way, shape, or form?
They're trying to enable them because that's, yeah, as you're right, that is a big portion of their patient population. But they still need to have these measures in place, these methods of reaching these patients. So you're seeing a push where they're deploying tablet devices. So, you know, if you come into my practice and we'll give you an iPad, I'll sit in your home, you can use this one button, you can do a video call with me. So instead of teaching them how to use their own device, they're providing them with the devices and the training to help them take that step. Yeah.
So was it last week?
Wait, if you go to the doctor, you get a free iPad? That's kind of awesome.
I was like, I'll go every 3 months. I will every 3 months to take my vitals.
Right. It's about when you need a new one.
Yeah, you see that a lot in home care and home health care, places where the majority of your care is provided in your own home. In that,
right.
Yeah, in that space is where you would see devices being deployed in that manner.
Was it last week or the week before we got into the whole discussion about IoT of healthcare, where like, because to me, I mean, that does. I mean, that starts bleeding into, you know, legalities and data privacy and all that kind of fun stuff. Because, I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, the guy that basically got convicted of burning his house down because of his Fitbit, you know, or the and some other monitor that they had on him as a home care thing that, right, like basically tracked his blood pressure and all that stuff. And they said, okay, well, your vitals don't match up with your story. You know, because he said he woke up and his house was on fire. Well, it showed him walking around his house, you know, for the 2 hours before the fire started. Right.
A 10-pound object that was probably liquid because the way it shifted around a little bit.
Right.
Your other hand was like you're playing tennis. You were striking a match.
So you were either putting gasoline all over your house or you were in the Detroit Metro Airport bathroom. So, yeah, so I mean, I'm interested. It's like, so like how much of a concern, you know, is that, does that factor in to what you've got going on?
There is a concern there because you do have privacy issues to be concerned about. And, you know, everyone knows about HIPAA. Anyone who has anything to do with healthcare knows HIPAA. And before, as a provider, before you can deploy any solution like that to the home, you need the authorization of the patient. Well, what happens if that patient then gives that access to the pizza guy that comes in, or gives that access to the estranged son or daughter?
To Walmart delivering your groceries.
Seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's where breaches can happen. You know, people don't think that breaches happen, you know, at the end user end. They always think it's, you know, it's the system, there's something wrong, you know, you were hacked or whatever. But, you know, a lot of breaches, especially in healthcare, breaches occur at the patient level.
Yeah.
Right.
No, God, well, I mean, it's gotten better. I mean, I remember when my grandparents died and cleaning out their house, and every mother of God, there had to have been 87 boxes full of paperwork that had their SOCH on it.
Right. Oh.
Because that's how they tracked everything
back
in the, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. It was, you didn't have a patient ID number. You had your Social Security number.
You know, that's a good point you brought up. It surprises me still today. I see a lot of companies still operate on paper. And a lot of healthcare organizations still have the patient records on paper. And I know of a few cases where an employee was fired by the owner of the company. Came back the next day when the owner was on vacation. No one in the office knew she was fired, walked in and grabbed the filing cabinet or a bunch of employee and patient records and walked out the door.
And here's the thing, though. Like, you look at – they went into EMR kicking and screaming.
Yes.
All the doctor's offices. They don't want to deal with any technology. I mean, what – you know, we do cloud storage. What doctor's office have you ever heard of that's advanced enough where they're doing things like – dumping stuff in the is there anyone?
It worked that way on Star Trek.
Ah, Star Trek. But you know, you follow what I'm saying? Like, it was hard enough to get them into EMR, but now they're almost saying, hey, you know, no more paper. You know, we want to put everything, you know, replicate to the cloud. And put in servers and
what are you going to do, dude? They need the chart to flip through in the little thingy at the foot of the bed so they look official. Like I don't.
Well, they're kicking a screen, but you don't really have a choice if you want to continue to make complaint. I mean, the shift to an EMR that was partially enforced and created by
and I guess from the government, but jargon standpoint, EMR is
electronic medical records.
Right. So it is a system that allows
listeners might not.
It's electronic medical record. It's your entire medical history available electronically for any physician. All the doctors were kicking.
Which sounds great.
It sounds great.
But then your entire patient history is out there in a single record somewhere. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's right. And then don't even get me started on the fact that you have two major giants, Epic and Cerner, fantastic companies. We've done some work with Epic, but now you have kind of like the big three of healthcare, IT, and EMR. You have Epic, and you have Allscripts, and you have Cerner. These are three major companies that handle electronic medical records, but none of them talk to each other. So if you go into a practice that works with Epic and you go to a practice that works with Cerner, they can't communicate, at least not easily. So now you have the government coming in and saying, oh, now you have to talk to each other. So it's unsettling for me because now we have to rely on government regulation to tell us how to care for patients.
It doesn't sound like it's relying on it to how to care for patients. But, it's almost like the I guess they could have at some point, done what – a lot of the major like automotives and those guys did with their suppliers. You've got the ANSI and EDIFACT standards for EDI, this is what a purchase order looks like. No matter where it comes from, no matter who gets it, this is what this record. When you see an 820, God screw me for remembering this. That's what that looks like. You do have the same thing going on now with connected car. You've got, all right, Ford's doing this, GM's doing that, Fiat's doing this. Then you've got Amazon that wants to come in and be this. You've got,
Sounds like two companies in the middleware business need to get started.
Yeah.
No, seriously, that's all I thought of when you said they don't talk. I'm like, well, hi, listen, someone go start a middleware company. You make millions.
Yeah, go be the Covisint for healthcare.
Right.
I was doing a lot of work with healthcare IT for a while when I was doing Cisco consulting, and there was a lot of things that hospitals wanted to do with outbound dialing and helping remind people today's an asthma action day and things like that. And it was basically part of the triple aim, which for the listeners at home, triple aim is basically how hospitals were getting paid for a while to increase patient outcomes. Do you think all this technology is going to actually increase patient outcomes, or is this going to just get us further away from our doctors?
I think both. Yes, because I think now we'll have better methods in place, the tools in place to perform that patient outreach and engage the patient. But also, it does keep the patients away from the physicians because I can do everything I need to do for my checkup at home. I'm not coming in and having FaceTime with my doctor or getting that medical exam. I'm doing it all from my smartphone app.
But think about that, though, for a minute. I'm going to cut you off, Jenkins. You think about it, you get push notifications. How many push notifications do you get every day on your phone?
Thanks,
too damn many.
You do not get one from your medical provider. You would think it would be very easy to implement a system where you'd say, hey, you haven't had a checkup in 6 months.
Time for your physical.
Yeah.
Hey,
get your
time for your physical.
Hey, fatty, get your butt in here. I'm going to weigh you. No, but I'm being serious.
We noticed that you're at Oktoberfest.
A lot.
Your arm's been curling quite a bit this evening.
But, one of the reasons why people don't go to the doctor is for procrastination reasons. Push notifications, they're, oh, my God, doctor's on me. I got to get going. I got to schedule an appointment.
Well, yeah.
If you made that process easy, they would see more people. I'm just kind of throwing
it out
there.
Well, but some of it's also the, okay, great, my appointment's at 1 o'clock, and here I am still sitting in the lobby at 2:30.
That too.
I got a life. Going to your point earlier, it takes half a day.
Right.
But I think also it's kind of designing the solution around the fact that, okay, well, now you need to get access to the patient data to make them aware that they have an upcoming appointment, which also means that you're going to have access to their name. You need their phone number in order to be able to do the SMS push. Now you have to design the security around that and deliver the application over a secure instance.
What if I don't have that phone number anymore?
And then somebody else gets your data.
Right. Never mind. I'll shut up now.
But yeah. It also kind of goes into the conversation, too, about the home device thing where they're giving people like the iPads or, you know, the devices from home. You know, what happens if that gets stolen? What kind of security measures do they have in place to ensure that that data is not retrieved or, you know, are they wiping the devices? Are they?
Well, they do have MDM solutions in place that will allow for remote wiping and tracking of the device. But, you know, what do you do when a device is stolen and kept off the Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
You know,
MDM is mobile device management, Dave. Just helping you out there.
Dude, don't. Or even more so if somebody's really super savvy and recognizes what they have, what's to keep them from keeping the device offline, breaking in, figuring out
cloning
how crypto
it.
Keys
yeah.
Were.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's – and these are the reasons why, you know, the healthcare industry is really skittish about getting into these technologies.
Right.
Cloud and AWS is really, you know – done a bang-up job with some of their storage solutions lately, as we've heard in the news over recent months, and I'm sure that's made them even more skittish about, you know, putting any of the solutions in the cloud.
And you mentioned cloud. What a lot of people don't realize is when you're working with PHI, protected health information, and you're using a cloud platform, you have to be careful where your data is hosted,
mm-hmm.
Where your data center is. You know, just because you're using AWS and they say it's HIPAA, you know, certified and they give you a BAA, Business Associate Agreement, doesn't mean that your data is not being held in China.
Right.
So you have to be sure that you know exactly where your data is being held.
And data traversal.
I was going to say, we're up on the top of the hour. We could talk about this all day. But Jenkins, where do we find you online?
So you can find me at samexonline.com, SAMEXonline.com.
Cool. And you're on LinkedIn too?
Yes.
Awesome. Jenkins, appreciate you coming into the studio. We're going to be back, speaking of the cloud, we're going to be back with Will Anderson from Cortex.
Which, again, is just someone else's computer.
No.
Oh, don't get me.
The cloud is not actually up in the sky. It's not the cloud.
This is the IT and the D Show.
And we'll be right back.
IT and the D. Read, meet, listen. Networking Detroit. One beer at a time.
Hi, I'm Brittany Daniel from The Game, and you're listening to IT and the D Show.
ITintheD.com.
Protect my people. Hey, this is segment 3, episode 215 of the one and only IT and the D Show, broadcasting here in Studio 1 in Podcast Detroit in beautiful Royal Oak, Michigan. Bob, the sales guy. Dave, the geek. Nuri, the FNG. Randy, I do the Twitter's Walker. Find us online, IT in the D.
Oh, yeah, and we got events coming up next month. Hit the meet tab and figure out where they are.
The guy won't call me back, by the way, for the MEAT. I know. I called him 3 times.
You can come see me at Pretzel Bell on Tuesday, October 3rd for our Ann Arbor casual networking event. I'll be there with Emily and Spencer. So come hang out.
And his business cards actually say I do the Twitters as a title.
They do. Kind of cool. You can see one of my business cards if you come meet me.
Yeah.
MEAT.
And then ours is somewhere later.
I don't think I'm going to be in town. But I told you that.
Of course not.
Right. But hey, we are joined. Thank you for being patient with us. Will Anderson's in the house from Cortech. I'm like, talk to me. What do you do? He goes, well, I'm a Microsoft MVP evangelist. And I go, you can stop right there.
Which, again, is the job we want.
Exactly.
Just go around and get paid to tell, hey, you know, hey, you hear about Microsoft? Cool.
You having problems?
They're
Microsoft
cool.
Can fix it.
Yeah. They're cool. We got people.
So we've been making fun of this whole time. They're like, you know, obviously cloud's a big deal what you're doing. We're like, what? So what? What is the cloud?
So, yeah, of course, there's the, you know, the cloud is somebody else's computer, you know, saying that everybody uses. But really, when you start talking about cloud, it's more about the delivery of the services or more appropriately, the consumption of services. So, you know, it traditionally in a data center, you're building up infrastructure, you're building all these servers to deliver web applications and SQL servers and different types of apps to be able to get your job done day to day. And from an IT perspective, your primary goal is to make sure that the underlying infrastructure is cared for, it's appropriately patched, et cetera, yada, yada, yada.
And then the damn marketing department comes along with an Amex.
Right.
But really, all the end users and all the app owners really care about are the services that are being being delivered. So with the cloud, it's more about delivering those services, and you know your service providers generally take care of the underlying infrastructure. So you have like SQL as a service, you have web app, you have containers and microservices that are like little bits and pieces of applications that are delivered as a whole that sit on top of a underlying service fabric or infrastructure, but you don't really see that underlying infrastructure. It's not something that you have to take care of generally.
Well, which is good because, I mean, thankfully, I think we're past the days where the CTOs and CIOs of the world want to bring customers past the giant rows of blinking boxes going, look what we have.
Oh, yeah. It's so cool. All these cool boxes that we spent millions of dollars on.
Yeah, that are out of date because they're 6 months old.
Those are the days of, like, I don't mean to be like, remember? But when Cobalt, that was the last time that had a cool rack of servers. They had the cool blue, like almost like a neon, and filled all 40 servers or whatever, filled a whole rack. God, those are like, and no one else has built anything like, you know, everybody else is kind of whatever.
But, yeah. Also, if you think about it too, when you have all of that metal in a data center, typically when you're building it out traditionally, you're planning for peak traffic, right? So I have some experience working with the big threes, and typically with those companies, take their web firm, for instance, the biggest day of the year for them as far as web traffic is Super Bowl, because, you know, they run those advertisements and then everybody wants to go and look at the new cars and see the ads and all this stuff. So that one day of the year, they have to plan out the infrastructure to be able to support that one day. Well, if you start looking at it as delivering web app through containers or in the cloud, you can actually scale instances up and down based on the amount of incoming traffic. So, you know, on a regular day, you might only have one or maybe 10 or 15 web instances to be able to handle that normal traffic. And then, you know, Super Bowl comes along. Everybody wants to see the new Ford Raptor commercial or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, the scalability of the cloud allows it to balloon out to like maybe 1,000 instances to be able to handle that peak traffic and then scale back after it's done.
Yeah, I mean, I know just from conversations I've had, the best example of that I heard was Domino's, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, because, you know, their business, yeah, I mean, their normal day-to-day comes in waves.
Yes.
Because it's dinner time, East Coast, Central Time, West Coast. So it's staggered. Whereas on like Super Bowl Sunday, it's huge rush all at once, all at the same time, all across the country, go.
Or in going back to our conversation about healthcare, so every year everybody has to go through benefits renewal, right? So it's same kind of scenario where typically, you know, maybe for about 2 or 3 weeks out of the year, you're going to have a lot of traffic with people registering and everything like that. But the rest of the time, if you're building a fixed infrastructure to be able to handle it, you're essentially burning money that you could be otherwise using elsewhere. And that's kind of what I specialize in over at Cortec is I do a lot of automation through PowerShell. And also the writing of Azure templates to be able to deploy not just, you know, a single VM or a single web app, but entire environments, entire infrastructure to build out an application to deploy it to different geos. Or maybe, you know, you might have a DR solution where, you know, you have this application instance and, you know, you need to be able to fail over. So you just push a button, kaboom, you know, this new environment.
Where's the kaboom?
You know, this new environment builds out for you. And actually, it even ties
– kaboom
is like probably a bad
idea. I'm picturing a commercial for a cloud hosting company with like a magician, like the old cartoony magician. And poof. You have a new instance.
I do it when I'm talking at those fancy presentations that you were talking about. Is you know, I'll typically, you know, show them, you know, nothing up my sleeve, nothing in this environment here, and then run some code, and 15 minutes later, I've got like 10 servers and a running web app. So you know, it's cool and fun, but on the other side of it, you know, it's really comes down to money and being able to deliver applications reliably. So,
Well, and I guess that's a good question. So like when you're looking at, you know, okay, so instead of planning out my own infrastructure to support that peak, you know, what does that look like cost-wise? So okay, so instead of managing and maintaining all of my own stuff, what does that move to the cloud get me?
So it really depends on where the application lies. You know, sometimes you can get away with building a web app or using containers and microservices to really deliver something that's light and nimble and scales relatively easy. And from a cost perspective, because so much of the underlying infrastructure is automated and handled under the covers, mm-hmm. it's actually really, really cost effective. Now, some applications are what we like to call legacy applications, stuff that requires full-built server. You can still get it into the cloud, but there's a lot more design consideration that mm-hmm. you have to take into it. And then, of course, scalability changes also. It's not instantaneous because you have to provision servers.
Right.
But even still, being able to provision
– sounds like – shared versus dedicated hosting, Bob.
Bye, 1999.
But with automation, I can deploy and destroy environments on the fly. So, you know, I can deploy dev test is a really good example. Companies out there oftentimes build dev to be reflective of prod, if not larger than their prod environments. So all these developers can go in and start testing their code out and stuff. But think about being able to use configuration as code in the cloud to where developers like, you know what, I need to be able to go ahead and test some new code against this application. They go to their service management tool that deploys that environment instance out to Azure, and you're paying for the compute for the time that it exists. They test their code, they validate it, and once they're done, destroy it, and you're not paying for compute anymore.
Hmm.
So the cost savings can actually, especially even just looking at like the dev test model and moving stuff over to that kind of a model, you can save millions of dollars out of your data center.
Well, and honestly, and here's why that makes sense to me. I mean, like candidly, most of the environments that I've seen, dev tends to be extremely scaled down. You know, you've got your prod environment, you've got your test environment, which is usually a smaller subset of prod, and then dev, which is an even smaller subset of test. So yeah, I mean that you do wind up putting a lot of constraints on developers. So having flexibility like that's a good thing.
Dude, I love it. I mean, like the amount of resources I have at my company just to manage my dev environment. Like it's a complete parody of prod, but it's actually running the exact same amount of VMs. It requires care and feeding, and what happens when it gets old and no one's updating the code on it. Like to be able to click a few buttons and say, oh, here's my new environment. It's an exact copy of prod, and it took me an hour to build, and then I destroyed it afterwards. Just like the power in that for a company is just – I mean, you're saving people resources and time. It's incredible.
Well, you don't have to patch environments that don't exist. You can grab the latest images that have the up-to-date patches when you're deploying the new environments. And then, you know, so there's all of, you know, the care that you mentioned. The other side of it, too, is once you start going configuration as code, you really start embracing that pets versus cattle mentality. I don't know if you guys have heard about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very much in the cattle perspective of I don't care what my computer names are. Mm-hmm. I just know that
– I thought it was don't name your cattle because then you're going to eat them. And I'm right.
Yeah.
Or I always say that.
Or as we usually say, you know, with a pet, you know, you love it, you feed it. When it gets sick, you take it to the doctor and you care for it. You know,
and if it costs too much, then you throw it away and get a new one.
Exactly.
Did I say that out loud? Throw it away.
With cattle, you shoot it in the head because you can get another. But when you start going to the configuration as code model, you know, from a cost perspective and an implementation perspective, especially if you're able to use that same code for deploying your dev, your QA environments, your prod environments all the way across the board, then not only are you, ensuring that, you're reducing the amount of time it takes to implement, you're increasing consistency across those environments, and it actually makes your test implementations a lot more smooth. One of the challenges that I always faced when I was doing server administration was as we were doing patching. Yeah, I'm a longtime SCCM guy, right? So patching was one of my things. You know, we put it in dev, all the servers patched, everything works. We put it in QA, all the servers patched, everything works. We put it in prod, everything's
breaks.
In fire, everything's broken because those environments didn't actually reflect each other. But when you're using the same code base across board, you know everything is going to be the same.
Oh, that's incredible. So thinking about cloud, like, and you're a cloud expert, right? And there's, I guess, basically three major flavors of cloud, right? There's Google Cloud Platform, GCP.
Mm-hmm.
There's Azure and there's Amazon.
Yes.
If I'm a company, which do I choose and why?
Well, I'm a little bit more partial to Azure because, you know, like I said, I'm a long-time Microsoft
Mr.
guy.
Microsoft evangelist, which platform should I choose? Yeah.
But
why don't you go ask Jess what kind of car you should buy?
It's not an Audi, that's for sure.
I think more importantly, though, is that you want to look at it from the perspective of you want to start with one and get proficient at it. Obviously, I'm going to lean more towards Azure because I know it better. But ultimately, I mean, Amazon and Microsoft have both proven that cloud itself is not infallible. Few years back, Microsoft with an errant patch managed to take down all of Azure globally. We had the storage snafu 6-7 months ago with AWS. And so really ultimately, you know, you want to cut your teeth on a single cloud, get proficient at it, get the automation going. But ultimately, you want to start looking at, you know, what about DR? What about load balancing? What about geo redundancy? And maybe start taking a look at multi-cloud solutions in order to be able to manage that.
Is that a different skill set? So if I'm like an Amazon AWS expert, am I going to be able to walk right into an Azure environment and figure it out? Or am I going to hire separate people to do all those types of different clouds?
So here's the cool thing that Amazon and Microsoft have
Nuri, stop working on your resume.
Hold on,
I'm right now. So Microsoft and Amazon have been kind of doing this. Yeah, we do cloud. We're together, but we're not together.
I like her, but I don't like her.
But like me and all my girlfriends, I got
frenemies.
We're just in the same room. But no, it's so Amazon and Microsoft both support PowerShell as an automation code base. Both of them support JSON for templates and whatnot. So if you have those two basic skill sets, which by the way. You know, I teach PowerShell. I actually run a user group out of Farmington for PowerShell. But if you learn those two code bases, PowerShell and JSON, and I really recommend doing PowerShell first. It kind of feeds into understanding JSON. But once you understand those two code bases, really you can go to either one, understand what they're doing, and figure it out from there.
Super cool.
So what's we've kind of gotten into some specifics. Like, what is your typical day as a Microsoft evangelist? Like, what is it that you do here?
So, use Apple's keynote, right? To demonstrate, right? Yeah.
I actually wear a couple hats. So at CoreTech, I'm what they call cloud solution architect. So typical day can be anything from ranging from designing solutions in code. Or going out and meeting with customers. And then the other side kind of feeds into the MVP, and it's all over the place. So I do travel frequently to talk at different events. I actually sit on the board of directors for DevOps Collective, which runs the PowerShell Summit out in
Super
Bellevue.
Cool.
I also, go out to like Hanover for PowerShell Conference EU. And then also teach at Tech Mentor, this year was my first year. Been writing books. So wrote Master PowerShell Tricks Volume 2 with a couple other MVPs. I'm in the process of writing a book on understanding and authoring Azure templates and taking that perspective of I'm a Windows Server guy. How do I understand how to write this?
Makes sense.
So I do that. I do a lot of mentoring. So I help.
I think Nuri's in love. Look at him. It's like,
I guess it's good we're sitting next to each other. But most importantly, it's about mentoring and teaching the community are two very big things for me. Is I like to try to give other people the same opportunities that I've gained by passing knowledge on to them, hopefully helping them build their own learning experiences so that they can grow, and then also kind of teaching what I know through user groups. So the Metro Detroit PowerShell user group is one that I run. I also do talks at like SMOG, the Southwest or Southeastern Michigan Azure user group, and you know other. And I actually do frequently user.
Be groups, honest, yes, how Skype. SMOG. It's how much cloud? Smag. How much giggling happens?
Yeah, all the time. And I think it was intentional. Chris Shelda actually runs that user group, and he does a fantastic job. But yeah, it's when they first told me about it, it was just like smug.
Yeah. You were smug about smug.
like the dragon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. Smug.
So where do you
or like the air over Detroit? It's kind of got that double meaning.
Yeah. So where do you stand, public or private cloud?
Depends on the solution and depends on what you're looking to do. So public cloud, you know, for end consumer, I think public cloud has a lot of good offerings. But it really depends on what you're delivering and how you're delivering it. Personal confidential data, you know, dealing with like HIPAA, high-tech, PCI, DSS, stuff like that. You really have to take a lot of things into consideration where that data is going to be housed. Data traversal rights kind of comes into play. But ultimately, you know, if you're delivering something to the end customer, you're probably going to have some public piece to it. Or it's probably a good idea to consider a public piece like the web front ends. You know, being able to deliver that application through a cloud instance that can scale quickly. It is going to be a lot more effective than trying to like reverse engineer that and keep it in your own data center. Whereas like the back end databases might be something that you would consider keeping in the data center or even use as a PaaS solution in the cloud, depending on what data and what your requirements are around it. Private cloud is kind of sketchy. I've seen some really good implementations. I've seen some really horrible implementations. And by really horrible, I mean like typically OpenStack, which they've, you know, had a lot of like the right things in mind when they were building it out as a community. But I think it's kind of like falling apart. Azure Stack is one of those things that I'm holding off and I'm really hopeful for it. But on the other side, it's like, we'll see. But I've seen other companies just go complete, build their own cloud. And really what it comes out to be is throwing like a lot of system center automation at it. And maybe it's just kind of clunky and doesn't work. So it really comes down to, you know, like I said, what you're looking to do and how you're looking to do it and what kind of solutions you're wanting to implement with it.
So we were talking kind of back and said, you know, hey, you know, what's next with the cloud? And you're like, oh, wait, let's save it for the show. So let's we're getting towards the end of the segment, but what's I guess what's next with the cloud? I mean, you talked a little bit about the container stuff and kind of that, you know, but I guess, yeah, what's next?
So container and microservices are huge right now, and it's only going to get bigger. So
things like Lambdas and Amazon or
– yeah, or okay. Docker or Pivotal Cloud Foundry is one that you probably heard in the news locally a lot. But the other thing that's getting super huge and just absolutely exploding, there's not enough people for it, is big data or, you know, data analytics, data science, that kind of stuff is just absolutely exploding all over the place right now. And the thing is there's a lot of gaps. There's not a lot of people that know how to do it effectively. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that space grows.
Well, it's difficult in my world because I'm in big data, machine learning, artificial intelligence, and I can't say it to anybody because it's such a overused cliche already. And
that's
it's
one
not
of my
even
favorite bands, big data.
Big data dynamite. That's big audio dynamite.
Big audio, yeah.
See, whenever I think big data, I think math, and my mom was a math teacher, and therefore naturally I am horrible at math.
What is big data? It's data, but it's big.
It's really big. but yeah, I think that delivering services through containers and microservices and being able to take all of that data that comes from all of the different devices and all of our consumers and everything and be able to collate it into to meaningful, useful product for our internal users is really where the big challenge and where it's going to really grow.
Well, that's the first time I got introduced to like Docker and a container, and I'm not even a coder. And I was kind of mind blown. I'm like, how cool is that? Where you can take stuff in production environment, just rip out like a 1/50th of the code, tweak it, put it back in, and you don't have to change a thing or take anything down. Well, it's done.
And I kind of feel like this is the direction it's going in. But when I first started taking a real serious look at containers, I'm like, why do we even have servers now? You know, it's all of these things like DHCP, DNS, time sync, print services. Why are these not microservices and just throw them on a nano or even direct on the hypervisor? And that's something that you're hearing about a lot more is not containers on servers, but containers at the hypervisor. It's like, why do servers even matter anymore? So it's really cool, exciting time to kind of be in IT and in the cloud space right now. It's constantly changing. IT is not boring anymore.
Well, I guess it depends on to who.
Yeah, but way up, Bob.
Yeah, exactly. What? But hey, we're running up against the end of the show, Will. How do we find you online?
So, you know, you can, of course, get me over at cortexservices.com, or you can check me out at GamerLivingWill. It's pretty much my handle for everything. So I'm on GitHub, Twitter, LinkedIn, everywhere.
Awesome. Appreciate the time. Appreciate the conversation. Everybody's kind of like happy now. It's like
right. Your eyes are glazed over, and Nuri and I are just,
I can't tell you.
I want a new cloud in my house. No.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, this is going to wrap up episode 215 of the IT and the D Show. We want to thank Jenkins Eboware from Samex and Will Anderson from Cortec. Also, we'd like to thank the sponsors of our show, Accelera Solutions, Bluehost, and Audible. Appreciate keeping the lights on behalf of.
And make sure you tune in next week for all the open mocking of Bob as we hit 216.
I deserve every word of it. I'll eat my humble pie, unlike you when you're wrong.
Well, I mean, when it happens, I will.
Yeah, right. It still hasn't yet. Yeah. So, hey, on behalf of Bob and Dave, Neri and Randy, do us a favor. Grab I almost did the meatball.
You totally did.
Drink up your drinks. Get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. Drive careful. See you soon.
The emergency disruptor system is now activated.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women.
Long live Flash! You've saved your life. Have a nice day.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Make the run! The run.
Game over, man. Game over.
It's over, Johnny. It's over.
Nothing is over. Nothing. You just don't turn it off.
I can't say no, and I don't really want to, so.
Well, especially with the back doors open.
Yo, hold up. Time out. Time out. Y'all take a chill. You need to cool that shit out. And that's the double truth, Ruth.
Bob loves it in the can.
I hope this was as much fun for you as it was for me.
That's why I like it in the can.
Joe, own the truth. Owns. 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 Owns.
Fear me.
My job is to make sure this program is morally upright and cultural and wholesome.
Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy. Shut up, Mimsy.
Why would, like, Buick put their cars next to, like, the Bentleys? Like, why? That's not marketing.
The alphabet.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, I can't take that position.
That analogy sucks because it's right.
Because you're getting your 8-track tuned up.
Are we at a break yet? Yeah, so now I'm just, like, doing, like, stupid stuff to make me laugh.
Venture capital is not the end game.
When are we going to talk about me?
Jane, you ignorant slut.
It's my show. I can say what I want. Yeah.
Kiss my ass. Go home. Unplug. Get off the goddamn internet. You are everything that is wrong with the internet right now.
So white right now.
I'm the whitest guy in the room. Just explain it to me.
I love this city. I was banging on the way.
Really? Should we talk about the tag team? Should I keep going or should I stop?
Can I just say, it's been great being on a show that talks about Mickey Rooney dying for 20 seconds and then poop for 10 minutes.